perfect time.
Okay, so I was given really, let's see, two questions about Shabbos, two questions about Goseis, a question about non-kosher meals, leaf and Hebrew question, and then there's the measles vaccine question, which is not really, it's more a question of a Hashkofa, question.
I don't think it's heated with anyone around here.
Okay, so where do you want me to start?
You start with Shabbos.
Okay. So I was given two questions in regards to Shabbos. The first question which was presented was the answering medical nursing questions on Shabbos, taking the responsibility to send somebody to the hospital, not send somebody to the hospital. Either way, there's a responsibility. You're dealing with potentially a health issue on one side, Chilul Shabbos on the other side. What should you do? So that's a hard question to answer. What should you do? Because I think that it's going. I mean, I would see that there's no blanket answer to that question. Depending on the circumstances of something which seems to be a significant issue. The halacha says clearly that a person should not hesitate. When it comes to Chilul Shabbos, a person should be Mechallel Shabbos. And matter of fact, the halacha says preferably should be done by Tamid Chachamim, because this way the message to everybody is that you don't hesitate. Mm-hmm. I had the situation once that happened in the Shiva on the Yom Kippur situation, and I ran to do it, because specifically I didn't want somebody to think, well, the rabbi doesn't want to do it, you know, let somebody else be the Shabbos going, you know. Like, you know, that's exactly what you don't want the message to be. The message to be that this is very important and you have to run to do it. That was brought down on aloha. I think in a certain sense, the nurses or the doctors definitely have to get that message as well. If they're going to be hesitating, so the message to the people is, okay, we probably shouldn't ask any questions, you know. If it's something that seems to be... Now, what point of a concern is a concern? That's always the fine line question. You know, 98% of the time it's fine, 2% of the time it's not fine. Like, so what point? I'm assuming that's what the question really is. I mean, it's one of these situations where...
Like, can it wait type of thing?
Well, sometimes it can wait. That's one question. Something usually, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's not something really so dangerous. You can wait a few hours and you'll go and you'll check it out. But there's that 1% chance where it's going to be a real, you know, it can be very dangerous. So are you Mechallel Shabbos for the 1% chance? So in general, the assumption in halacha is, without putting specific exact numbers on it, there has to be a suffix which is severe, which means it seems to make sense that there's a concern. As opposed to, like, you know, there's this way out 1%, you know, a half a percent chance type of a thing. You don't have to be Mechallel Shabbos in the situation. There's a tshuva from Moshe Sternbuch, which he says anything which is, which any percentage, which is, he actually uses 1 in 1,000. 1 in 1,000 is enough that you have to take it into consideration.
Wow.
That's a bit chiddush.
Wow.
That's a very big chiddush. So what's why I'm saying that if somebody felt that was the situation warranted that possibility, I can't say they're doing something wrong. Right? But in general, I don't think that's the number we're talking about. You're talking about, but if it's a 1% chance, I don't think you should be sending to the Shabbos. But I think it should try to be monitored, obviously, in most of the situations. Okay.
Is there any specific situations where you would say, like, yes, more so than 1 in 1,000, like for a child, for example, like, a child, it's a little bit scarier when a child has something going on. So would that percentage be...
Well, the point by child is the halacha looks at a child as a chayla, automatically as a chayla. So if, for example, this is all talking about... Let's go back a step. There's a difference in halacha between having a goy drive to the hospital and having a Jew drive to the hospital. Very big difference in halacha. A goy can be asked to do any malacha deraisa, anything, even on a Torah level, for the tzarech of any charla, even though there's no sukkah, even though it's not life-threatening. Mm-hmm. So if I have a situation where I do not believe it's life-threatening, but I think that the child will do much better, the child is clearly sick and will do much better in the hospital, you can have a goy drive him to the hospital. That's not a question.
So even if they got like a cut that might scar worse if you don't deal with it soon, even though it's not.
So
it's like a cut that's not obviously.
It has to be the definition of chole. So with the definition of
stitches.
So I'm saying like stitches. No, I'm saying like stitches that like it's like a small cut that could, if you stitched it, it would heal better. So like,
but you have time.
So you can call a guy. You're saying it's not a big deal because it's not.
So the chole. So the definition of chole means that a person is ill enough that the person would take the bed. But the child is not well. Oh, here the child is well. It happens that he has a cough. Right. So that's a different type of situation. Anytime there's a situation of chole, so child has a fever which is not life threatening type of a fever. You know, halacha looks at that the definition at 102 for an adult is considered life threatening. 104 for a katan is considered life-threatening. And also, it's from Moshe's Shuvah.
How long?
104.
So,
what do they break the arm? They fall, you suspect that they've broken an arm.
That's more of an emergency because, I mean, you can end up with all sorts of things.
You could end up throwing a blood clot, you could end up, like,
you could have
compartment syndrome. A whole lot of things with a kid.
The arm could be cutting off blood flow, they could lose a finger if it's cut off long enough.
So anything which potentially is a sakana to a neighbor has a general
title.
Yeah.
Okay. And what about at some point, this is not exactly the same, but I heard that loss of eyesight is equated or is considered more.
There's a fascinating Gemara which we don't understand exactly the anatomy of exactly what the logic behind it is, but the Gemara says that there's a connection between the heart, between the eyes and the heart, and therefore anything which an infection, etc., to the eyes can directly affect into the heart, and therefore it's considered a sakana. Now we don't understand exactly what the anatomy, exactly how that works in science nowadays, but the halacha still accepts that decision of a gemara. It's clear gemara; you can't argue on that. So if there's, if you have, I'm talking about the kids getting
blood pressure. Fair.
You know what it is, I don't know. But
eyes are treated more leniently than some other injury.
Right. So the main injury to the eye, where there's pus, there's bleeding, something like that. You know that if you're asking a goy, it's for sure.
Right.
There's a doubt.
But there's a possibility that even the Jewish parent could take their child
correct,
in if
situation.
There's like potential loss of
now,
eyesight.
I just want to go back a step and address the option, the difference between a goy and a Jew for doing malacha, especially driving. Like, a lot of other malachas, driving is a real big challenge when it comes to Chilul Shabbos. My understanding, this is there's a Bechon University called Summit. Maybe some of you have heard of it. It's like one of these technology Shabbos Bechon. So the head of that is Rabbi Rosen. He has a long tshuva where they published Tchumen, whoever you're familiar with, the periodical Tchumen. So he has a long essay where he points out that a malacha which is done by the person's body, the weight of the body, even without any action, is called his action. He's specifically talking about the weight of the person moving in the elevator. If you ever, by the way, going up in elevators is much more lenient in halacha than going down in elevators.
Huh?
Yeah. Okay, let me explain that.
Gravity.
Oh, gravity.
So actually, when the elevator...
It's more lenient going up.
It's more lenient going
up than going down. Okay, let me explain why. Okay, ladies, listen.
It's the way that the elevator works.
So the way the elevator works is when it actually goes down, the weight of the person in the elevator, when it goes down, generates electricity. It actually generates electricity. The elevator actually generates electricity, and most systems are set up that the electricity which is generated goes back into the building's grid. So the elevator is actually lighting your lights.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
The more weight in the elevator, the more electricity it generates. So this was his question. If I go into the elevator and it's going down and I weigh 300 pounds, I add more electricity. So my weight is actually making the lights burn in the building. So he holds that's considered a problem.
Wait, so what about Shabbos elevators? While we're on the subject.
Shabbos, now, so Shabbos elevators, the amount which it produces going from floor to floor, it doesn't pick up almost any speed because it stops at every single floor. That is going to injure, right? This is more, you get into the 12th floor, you go down to the first floor, it goes from floor to floor, it's almost stopping before it's starting.
But the Shabbos elevator in the tower goes all the way up. And then one.
It goes down. Right, so, but the point I'm saying is that, so let's say, if a person's driving a car, so basic elementary mechanics of a car. Right? You.
Not like. So
right. So if you don't have an electric car, if you have an electric car, it's a whole different ballgame.
Oh, it's actually less problematic.
Much less problematic. I mean, thousands of times.
Oh, and yeah.
Let me explain. Everybody knows your car. Your car has this beautiful thing on the dashboard called this. It measures the amount of revolutions per minute.
Yeah.
So it has two or three or four.
Oh, RPM. Yeah.
RPM
yeah.
times.
I've seen that.
Times.
Does that work?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So
it's really 3,000.
When it says when it's hitting three, that means there's 3,000 times that there's going to be an explosion of gasoline inside of your engine in a minute.
Wow.
That's how fast the car is.
Right.
Okay. Why is that happening? Because your foot is on the gas. I'm not doing anything. I'm having my foot on the gas. According to Rosen, that's called your Misa. Huh. So in 1 minute, you've done 3,000 actions of lighting a fire on Shabbos.
But if it's for a pikuach nefesh, then you're
it's all mitzvah.
Supposed to.
Correct, exactly. But if they ask a goy to do it, in a situation where a goy is easily available, and so, for example, when the people ask in regards to a woman who's expecting going to the hospital, that's something which you know beforehand, you can arrange beforehand, and it's not with this rushing, every minute is, you know, and there are situations where that's true also, but and assuming
but
that the people are.
What you said in the beginning.
Okay, so that's what I want. In a case where there is no difference, there's no concern of waiting, A, and B, it's understandable to people that it's not the imminent rush. So then you should ask the goy to do it instead. If you have a moment, a situation of emergency, start looking for a goy is wrong. But if the goy is right there, you can ask the goy to do it. So. In these type of situations, where a mother comes, she says, "You know, the kid is—he's running 105. I'm bathing him. He's not. The temperature's not going down. I'm giving
That's
him
absolutely
some."
Not recommended anymore.
Well,
it's not
safe.
Okay, good.
No,
yeah.
Thanks
exactly.
a lot.
Of,
sorry, we don't know. We're not kids.
So you know, the medication is not pulling down the temperature, right? So does she have to run? The next door neighbor is a goy. Ask your neighbor to drive. You know, pay him. Pay $50 to drive him to the hospital. That's much better than driving yourself. So that's people don't. Now, an electric car, as far as I'm concerned, is almost the exact same thing. There's no difference in asking a goy or doing it yourself. I believe on Hatzolah should get all people on Hatzolah should get electric cars.
Yeah.
I really feel that that's a tremendous.
Especially since most of their calls are not
can
emergencies.
Can you ask them directly,
know, right?
The goy to drive you to
this is all direct. Yeah, there's no hinting, okay? This is a direct conversation.
So!
I'm talking about direct conversation. Okay.
Right. It's really the hardest part is when to make that call. But if you know that, if you tell them,
but I think it's within your scope of practice. Meaning,
right,
you as a nurse, feel
you're concerned.
Right, but I'm saying in this case, if they're coming to you, if we know it's an outright emergency, it's not hard. I don't have that angst. Like, should I tell them to be machal Shabbos or not? If it's an outright emergency, I know. If it's something benign, I know to tell them not to go. But it's those gray areas. But in those gray areas, you usually have time, and that's the time you could then say, you know what, I think you should go in. Please find someone. You know.
You can call
911.
Yeah, Uber.
You can call 911. You call Uber.
Seriously, you're not paying. Set up Uber.
You know, you can
use your
technology.
Yeah.
Using the technology to use an Uber.
Less
Total
Shabbos.
For the Sarah.
Yeah.
It's preferable to do it with a machinery.
Yeah.
So you can do it with a knuckle or something like that. While I'm at it, I'll just tell you a fascinating halacha shaila I got. A woman was deployed to Afghanistan. And the Balash Chuba deployed to Afghanistan. She's in the Marines. And the first question she sent to Shiloh was that whenever there's any type of something incident which happens, everybody in the base has to check in with the central command that they're safe. Otherwise, they're going to send out the Marines. Mm. Right?
Oh.
So, is she allowed to contact the base? They said, well, if you have a non-Jew with you, you can call, either call or text. You should ask them to do it. If not, you do it yourself, no question. Next question she sent back, is it better to call or better to text? That's a great question.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
So, my psak is it's actually better to text than to call.
Really?
There's much more in a Rehan in the Sakha that it's actually better to call to call than to text.
So either way you're right.
Either way you're wrong.
Yeah. mean, I either right if you're going with either.
Right. So, what the point I'm saying is that there's much more technology right. used in a call than there is in a text, and you will see that you will see your battery usage.
Yeah.
Oh. There's much more circuitry being used in a phone call than there is in a text. So even though I don't see the circuitry taking place, whereas by the texting I see it's only super mitterabonim. So it's but if whereas the call, my understanding is that even though you don't see the actual circuitry taking place, if you see the result of this call, you see the circuitry. So therefore, you are. It's nicker to you many actions of thousands and thousands of circuits which are being completed at nanocircuits, but they're circuits. So. If you have that, if you need to do that option, I feel the texting is better than calling. Mm-hmm. So that's why, as far as I'm concerned, calling a contact to an Uber, which is done through minimal circuitry right. usage, is more like texting than it is better than actually calling a taxi.
So if you needed to record something on Shabbos, I work in Kamp Simcha, so we're working, you know, Shabbos the whole week, whatever. And if things are going on, would Rabbi Engel say prefer to type on your computer or record things in a text, like if you needed to record vital signs, whatever is going on, or versus writing with a shinoi, let's say?
Interesting question. I think typing, the three options are recording voice recording, like on the phone. You mean type?
Oh, no, and I just meant to document on the phone.
Yeah,
to save it on the phone, like as a note, and then you can get back to it.
Okay, you give me three options, two options.
Is it better to write with a shinoi or to type, whether it's on a computer or on a phone or whatever it is? I mean, which would be preferred?
I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about that.
Well, everyone in Camp Simcha is considered, like...
They are cool.
But I'm saying...
Right.
Well, you said the phone is
Drabanan,
right?
You can minimize... Writing is also the question is, there's probably less Drabanan in the writing than there is in the phone.
But also the question is the documentation part of the treatment? It has to be done so that they know what medication the patient got and the reactions to it, but it might be less English.
Anything which you can do with your mind until Shabbos without any, there's no hesitation about it, you should do this. So over here, if I can limit the until Shabbos, I better do that. Okay, let's go on. Now, the next question was regards to the Torah on Shabbos. A person is having difficulty switching with somebody else on a Shabbos situation.
You mean like a shift?
A shift, and they have a shift. So
I think Justin has to do this.
What?
Can I think of it? No, my husband asked him this.
Moshe holds, if you have an option of switching a shift, you should, even if it means that the shift you're going to take is going to be a more difficult shift. So he holds that if you have that option, you should do that. Now, the Rosh Hashanah actually held in Eretz Yisrael, where you're dealing primarily with Jewish patients. So he held it was better that if you have a choice between a frum nurse doing it versus a non-frum nurse doing it, it's better the frum nurse to do it, because the non-frum nurse is going to do a lot more unnecessary chilul Shabbos.
Yeah.
And the frum nurse will keep the halacha better. So you're switching with that person, you're sort of setting them up for a lot more chilul Shabbos. If it's switch between one Jew and another Jew, I'm talking about switching with a non-Jew, chutz l'aretz. And Eretz Yisrael, that wasn't really the option. Usually it was between a frum Jew and a non-frum Jew. He says, that's a different ball game, because if you're switching with the other nurse, and her name is Goldberg, right? So, I mean, and she's Jewish, not that her father's Jewish, but she's actually Jewish, or her name is something Italian and she's Jewish, right? Mm-hmm. You know, she's been with you a few times already, you know, that she's Jewish, so that's really, you should, you know, that I would advise against strongly.
Here?
Here, right. In Rarik also, if you're going to switch with a non-Frum Jew, you're putting them in a situation where
they're doing... Didn't you have that risk one time where you tried to ask?
I have a bunch of nurses on my unit who, like, tell me, like, I'm not really Jewish. Like, so, yeah, and they were, like, offering to switch with me.
And it ended up being a Jewish person that you switched with?
No, I was, like, I'm wondering whether I could switch with her. So, I think in the end, Rabbi Milakovsky said it's complicated and then never come back.
I think it's a quick one, but maybe not. What about being on call?
But you're a nurse practitioner.
So, like, for, like, I mean, I'm not the surgeon itself, but there were talks about having you be put on call for a weekend. And, like, I would do nothing other than take the consults from the emergency department and then direct them to, like, their care.
So phone calls.
Yeah.
So on call now, if on call you have to go to the hospital, on call it means taking phone calls.
Well, I mean, sometimes you would have to go to the hospital to, like, do the consult.
So if you have you're asking that you have no option. I mean, how much do you have to get out of that situation? Like,
so I guess it's individualized, basically, is what you're telling me, because it's not a
listen, this is the job, are you allowed to take the job if they tell you up front that this is what you're going to have to do, is one question.
In the job, and they're
right in the job, and say, this is the deal, otherwise we fire you, it's all the questions, and if how much you have to try and switch, there's like right. Layers of the questions,
yeah.
So which one are you asking? Or all of them?
I wouldn't know, like,
if your job is at risk, if you don't...
Well, I mean, because they're getting rid of all the physician assistants within the hospital for surgery. So then each department is going to have their own, like, nurse practitioners in their department, and then they will be put on call at different times.
Once you're on call, whatever reason, they know that's the reality. So you're allowed to deal with what you have to deal with.
Okay. You know? And being on call doesn't mean you're for sure going to get a call in Shabbos, right? You have a good chance you might not.
The whole 25 hours.
Right.
Call.
Right. I'm saying, but if you do get a call, my assumption is if they're calling for a reason. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's
not very... But yeah, that's
not all stories.
No, but in general, if they're calling for the emergency room for surgery, the assumption is this person is sick enough that it's going for surgery
now.
Pretty soon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Does she leave the job is a question?
So do I...
No.
That's another question. Or do I have to stay there? If I go there...
No,
I'm
saying, does she have to, like, say she can't work there anymore?
No,
like,
because once you're in the situation, there's a hetzer to be mechalel Shabbos, so that's not... All the assumption we have in Pittsburgh is we're allowed to mechalel Shabbos for Jewish or non-Jew, whatever that assumption is, that all of that, there's no one.
So no one should go actively seek a job that requires a weekend call, but if you already have the job
correct.
And they're now obligating you to take a call, you don't have to
Okay,
walk
now.
Only there's a
first
shoulder.
Okay, a non-frum Jewish patient has a non-kosher meal. Can a frum nurse assist the patient to eat?
So, a non-Jewish patient?
A non-frum Jewish patient has a non-kosher meal.
Yeah.
Right. Can a frum nurse assist the patient to eat?
Or order food for them.
So let's divide the question. In a case where the patient really can eat on their own, in the case where the patient can eat on their own just with difficulty, and you're assisting them, or the patient could order on their own, and you're assisting them. For a non-frum patient, it is actually mutter to do that. Okay?
So what
are you
saying?
But that's why you're doing it, because they can't do it on their own.
But in a case where they cannot do it on their own, you should really try and have somebody else do it. It's a difficult halacha, define a heter for it. The biggest heter
for free food or not? I'm saying for, like, meat and milk together or for not kosher food? Because, like, aren't sick people who are in the hospital allowed to eat?
We have vegetarian options.
No, I'm saying not vegetarian, like not kosher chicken. I'm saying if
it's not like a meat or rice.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
Well, okay. The person who is in sakana is allowed to eat non-kosher food is because that's what's going to heal him.
Oh.
Or because that's he's ill to the point that he needs food immediately, and that's the only thing which is available.
Okay.
There's a kosher meal there. So right. I want the doctor, the non-kosher right. meal. Okay. I cannot. Well, he since he's sick to the right. kosher, like I can't. if the kosher meal is going to kill him, so yes, you shouldn't.
But if he doesn't want to eat it, if he won't eat it, I only want this meal. Then he's not going to eat, and he needs to eat to heal.
So this is the famous mice of the North Weinberg, right?
You do.
Famous Eisel of Noach Weinberg, excuse me for going off out of the. So there's a mice, he was down in Miami, I don't know how many years ago this was, and he was giving his shmuz about the importance of kibbutz kodikim, etc. And somebody came up to him and said, "You know, I made a bal tshuva." He says, "Really?" He says, "Would you make it?" He says, "A 97 year old woman." He said, "What? How do you make a 97 year old woman frum?" He says, "Well, I'll tell you the story. A person owns a nursing home. And there was a Jewish woman there in the nursing home who was not from, and he was feeding her kosher food as the halacha that he has to give her kosher food. And she was upset because she wanted her non-kosher food. And when the inspector came, she complained to the inspector. And the inspector says, "Well, you're in some way not treating her properly. This is some type of an infraction, and we're going to shut this place down."
Mm-hmm.
She said, "So what happens is I made her frum. Like, how do you do it?" I don't know, but I have a choice. I'm going to lose my whole business. So he said, "You see, when it's really important to you, you make it happen." That was Rabbi Weinberg said, "You do what you got to do, right?" So okay. So a lady comes in, you know, they want the really non-kosher food. Like, you know, come on, the kosher food is better. He tried the whole thing. It's more healthy. She says, "I'm 97. I couldn't care less." There's a famous saying that a person who's 95 and he smokes and drinks till he's 95, he's still alive. You know, like, you know. My father-in-law, Klein Horror, is 95, and he still eats his very fatty food, and he's not changing it now. You know? Okay.
What about microwaving milk and meat together for non-Jewish patients?
Because you're cooking
like a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
So Rosh holds that microwaving has a din of bishul midaraisa. So is it the rice of cooking them together? There are other parts that say that it's not considered like bishul, and therefore it would not be nisid the rice to cook them together. There's nisid the rice of cooking milk and meat, whether you eat it or not.
Uh-huh.
Right? If a person takes a milk and meat and puts it into the oven, never eats it, just cooks it, he did nisid the rice.
Right.
So
you can't eat. There's a conflict of whether or not a microwave is considered bishul.
The question is the microwave considered bishul with the Torah? So bishul is considered bishul. Sure, Marsha holds that it is. Marsha's Truba was dated in the 1970s when it was first when it first came out. And he said this became like a very common thing, etc. My feeling nowadays that I'm not convinced that that's true. And that most people nowadays, at least in the world I live in, use microwaves for warming things more than for cooking.
Yeah.
We could do both.
That's true. The question is, if it becomes a standard way to cook it, it goes into the bishul dessert. So do people use microwaves for cooking? I don't know. I've never taken a poll of the society. So
more and more.
So in the end, are you allowed to or not? You're not.
I think a person should really, if there's no other option, I think there's one to rely on to be leaning in. But I preferably, according to Moshe, it's also. I prefer not to pass it against Moshe Feinstein.
In your text,
and
yes,
it feels really
uncomfortable.
But I have,
yeah, right.
I mean, I had this Shiloh. Somebody asked me this. He was going to culinary school, so he had to cook certain foods. He didn't have to eat them. He could have, but he had to cook certain things. Well, and he asked me,
"Made cheese." Remember,
right.
We had the
ashtray.
If the cheese,
we couldn't do it.
No, we couldn't do it.
No, I want to tell you like this: if the meat is a non-kosher meat, if it's chaser, it's mutter.
Oh, I didn't know
that. Oh,
it's only if it's beef. Or chicken. You know, chicken durabana. Chicken durabana, you can be made, there's no mystery bishul. But if it's beef or it's lamb, So that's the meat itself, even though it wasn't shechted properly, the meat itself is a kosher meat. The issue of cooking milk and meat together doesn't apply to non-kosher meats. So if it's chazer, you can cook, you can cook the pork with milk is fine. So just convince the guy, if he wants to have milk and meat together, just make sure that he has, you know, bacon, you know, right?
That's good.
While
you're already at it.
So wait, sorry, can you order for people? Let's say they can feed themselves. They need help ordering.
It sounds like a cook, right?
If they're able to really do it themselves, even though it'll be difficult.
They're able.
Yeah, so then you can
order themselves.
Yeah.
Well, let's say they don't speak English. That's what could happen.
Yeah.
Let's say somebody Jewish who doesn't speak English, and they can't order. Or a trait, whatever it is, they can't. They have no voice, so they point to things, and then I have to order for them.
So then they can't order themselves.
So they officially, if someone came up to take their order, they'd see them pointing.
There is an opinion which says if a person can't do it himself, but there's somebody else available who will help them, that's equivalent to they can do it without you. It's not very reliable of a heter, so I would try and stay away from that. If possible.
Trying not to order food for something Jewish that's not kosher.
Right.
What about something non-Jewish, like cheeseburgers? That's not
right.
A problem.
Yeah. Okay, so there was a few halachos over here regards to goseis. Turning, cleaning a dying patient, administering meds, starting an IV, etc. So
work. Does it have to be with Jewish or non-Jewish? It doesn't matter.
Oh, Jewish, right?
Is it only for Jewish people?
No, actually, it's no. Like that issue, let me explain. The Gemara says that a person is in a state of ksisa, which that's very hard to define exactly what that means in halacha, but we'll call it death rows, right? A person is actively dying, as opposed. So it's the equivalent of murder to potentially do something to him. I'm using the word equivalence in a very specific way.
So you're saying for Jewish and non-Jewish.
So it applies to non-Jewish also.
You're saying you're hasten someone touching them, anyone moving
right.
them.
Right.
He's not allowed to kill non-Jewish people.
Is that
either.
Like not closing your eyes?
You're not allowed to kill non-Jewish people either.
Like when I was in the ER, we had a lot of people die with their eyes open, and like part of the hacking of them is assaulted.
But that's after death. Ghosis is in the process.
No, so what Shana is saying, there is actually, the Mishnah says one of the things you can't. So there's two things you can't do to him. There's two sets of things you can't do to him. There's one of the things you can't do. The things which are done after a person dies. The reason why that's prohibited is because the message to him is you're dying. And that's not healthy.
But once they're dead.
Once they're dead, you should do that. But so that's one issue. The second issue is there are certain things which the more quotes is movement, etc., can hasten the death.
And we see that after, yeah. I mean, most nurses who have worked in critical care have had an experience where you turn a patient. And
you turn a patient, they could and die.
Turning the patient can actively kill them.
Bats are deadly. Don't give them.
No, we don't. If someone's actively dying, to them, you document it. I'll give
bats
you.
Bats are deadly.
Right. Right. So like this.
No touch, no turn.
It's fascinating. This question. My Rosh Shiva of Gifter was very makbid in this halacha of not movement, etc. I went to a shiur from Hirshel Schechter, and he was much more makel on it. And to the point was I found it like it was, you know, he had some big coolers. And I once looked into it more, like to see what else is out there. And I was interested to read the difference between doctors' attitudes and nurses versus emergency personnel's attitudes.
Doctors aren't in there when they're actually.
So the doctor, nothing happens. The nurse is saying, "What do you mean we're killing the people? We do this, you know." Yeah. And it was like,
they
there was an ambulance. There was like, you know, different. Was one person was a game David Adam was written in Ivrit, but there was a the fellow said they're working in ambulances as emergency personnel for 20 years. He says that happens all the time. Yeah, yeah. You know, and the doctor said, "No, it never happens." You know, like, you know, like, you know, like.
They don't want their numbers
swapped out. So,
makes their numbers look bad.
So I found that very, very just the sociological element of it, I found very fascinating. Yeah. So the Geshur Chaim says if you see the patient's going to reach that point, so regards to cleaning, etc. So if it's you should try and clean it beforehand. Anything that you want to do before it reaches that point. Before that point. Afterwards, if it's something which is clearly to the point which is going to be potentially the staying in the, you know, the blood, the dirt, whatever it is potentially could affect the person. So you do what you're allowed to. Regards to.
So that means that if they're soiled, then you can clean them.
It means if you're soiled, you can clean them, right?
That's, even if they're actively dying.
Even if that's what Rishon Hazal is. Even if they're actively dying, but. He says if it's, you know, it's something which can be just covered over and left to the side, you should do that. That's what Rishon Hazal's approach to it.
But then after they're deceased,
then you can off.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Because like backing
it. I guess coffee with family. Most families don't want their family members sitting in their own stool or urine.
They don't want them to be soiled when they pass because they're all in there generally.
Right.
Right. But at the same time, when I was a nurse in the ICU, I know sometimes we would there are ways to like. Clean someone just
let me explain something. Okay, so the Gemara says that a person who's mazes goes is kilo shevadam. It doesn't mean it's mama shrichas dam, and there's multiple.
I'm in big trouble.
What?
I said that's good. Otherwise, I'm in big trouble. I've had lots of goses cases.
So you know, there's a lot of situations where you know you have like she was written to a doctor who did something, and then you know the person died, and he feels bad. You know, and he asked the shayla, did I have the tshuva? You know, the answer is it's the Rambam says it's ki'ilu shevadam. That's the Gemara's language. It's ki'ilu shevadam. The Gemara says if you embarrass somebody in public, you also ki'ilu shevadam. We wouldn't call you a Ritzea for that. Right? You know,
you're trying to help somebody, you don't want to be key you.
I understand. So in other words, the we're not seeing these the potential for this, the percentages are halakhically high enough that it's really us regretting. The more it's creating an Isser on it. So therefore, now is there an issue of touching? Many persons hold there's no issue to touch. The Isser is just to move. So I have this, you know. Well, then you have a situation. So, a family member wants to touch, you know, they want to touch the person who's, you know, in that situation. So the shach holds it's also to touch. So you want to, you know, you have somebody who is keeping a look on that type of, you know, approach. I say, listen, you should better not to touch. Somebody else has, you know, they really, really, you know, need to have that their final goodbye. I'd say it's mutter, you know, there's what to rely on this mutter. So minimal movement of Shema Zalman says is not a problem. So that it, the issue more is long as you're actually moving the body. You know, moving, you know, a full large limb is being moved or the whole body is being moved, that you want to try and stay away from.
And what about CPR?
What?
She said encoding, and I said CPR. It's
situation.
Synonym for the same.
They're dead or dying.
Well, not always. Sometimes they're right. I mean, usually they're officially dead. No, if it's PEA, then maybe they're.
But sometimes they're ROSC, which is, you know.
No, you do get them back. Yeah. No, they're considered dead if they're asystole, but it's, they're not always. Sometimes.
If in a situation where there's any potential of
saving,
which I mean, even if it's you know, it's very remote.
So that
you know, then there's no shadow what to do. Right? That you have to do something. You have to, you know, any situation which is potentially an act of Hatzolah, even if you end up killing them. You didn't act
You have to follow protocol. So, like, when you come in, when someone comes in and the EMS has been doing CPR for 20 minutes, you
still
have to follow.
They're dead.
Protocol is that you had to follow, you had to do good, hard CPR for 20 more minutes once they enter the ED.
Because
evidence based that it is possible that people can come back after 30. Yeah.
Yeah.
It happens. It's possible.
So
you know, good questions going on.
The question of their long-term
brain injury.
Right, but you're still saying you'll still have
halachic life, they'll have cardiac function.
Right, yeah.
Even if they're brain dead.
Well, that's a whole issue on our floor. Right. Don't even... fine.
No, you... Don't ask any questions. You
don't
want
to get... I don't want to rate that right now.
That's she's in neuro ICU, so I'm sure...
So we have a lot of legally brain dead, but the heart's still pumping, and it's the whole...
That's huge. Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, I just thought of a situation like that. Anyway, okay, let's not go there.
It's a lot of people choose not to.
No, I'm saying, it's you know, the best thing, as far as I'm concerned.
The whole lecture in it itself.
Rishlomo Zalman's Ha'ora is a very good Ha'ora. He says the following. He says that a lot of the testing which is necessary to give a person the full status of brain death are not testing. He's a goysis. And you're doing actions to him. Any person you think is in that situation probably has the status of a ghost. To move a ghost is for the purpose of any way where you can help him, etc., is permitted. Most of the testing is not for the purpose of helping the individual, it's to give him his status, and however or not you can then decide to stop treatment, etc. So that's not a valid movement that you're allowed to do for the purpose of so in that situation. I would say, ask the doctors, what's the need to do it? If the doctors are willing to discuss the situation, I want to know, why are we doing this? Besides, because you want to be able to decide what his status is. Is it going to benefit the patient in some way or other? If the answer is no, they should not do it. And that's what I advise families if the doctors are willing to listen. Okay. Now, the last part, which is... I have 10 minutes before I have to go tomorrow. Okay, so the measles vaccine issue. Okay. What should our receptive be towards the minority rabbonim, a few who are very chashuv gedolim, who promote anti-vaccine sentiment in spite of the vast majority of those in the medical and halachic communities who believe and promote otherwise? It's hard to maintain respect for someone who may be endangering vulnerable individuals and generating an epidemic of a once eradicated disease, and yet very few of these rabbonim are supposed to be the gedolim we look up to. Mm-hmm. Question number one. So that's a Shkabel question, not a Halacha question. Okay. Number two.
Who do we turn to for that? Your LOR?
I'm not saying I'm not going to give an opinion, but I'm just finishing reading the question. Torah said that kicking out and vaccinating children out of school.
Yes.
Okay. Can people be forced for the good of the cloud to vaccinate or do other medical intervention? So those are the three questions. So I'm going to answer number two and number three first. Now I'm going to give you my understanding, which it's not binding upon everybody out there. I believe that you can ask an unvaccinated child to be you can disallow an unvaccinated child to come to school. You can. Okay.
What?
Yeah, but you can stay.
And a person.
No, Maryland law says
so. No, private schools can do whatever they want, but we'll talk. No. Anyone who's interested.
Not anymore. New York just passed a law.
No.
Now,
private schools can do whatever they want.
No.
So,
we'll talk.
New York Times, front page today.
Yeah.
Front page of the New York Times today.
Yeah.
They
have to vaccinate.
What?
New York has to vaccinate.
Yeah.
Mayor de Blasio, did you see that?
No, I'm saying private schools can choose to, even if there's state law, that say that you
it's
have
to
take
so no religious
exemptions.
Okay, so now can people be forced for the good of the cloud to vaccinate? In other words, not out of the school, but out of we're part of a society.
Mm-hmm.
That Shulman Rav Moshe Sternberg talks about the 1 in 1,000. He actually he's been talking about in the context of measles vaccination. He holds if you're creating a situation where you're potentially bringing a disease like that into 1 in 1,000, it's considered you're creating a sakana, and you have to stop that. That's where Rosh Hashanah is writing his truth. So according to him, I think the answer is yes, it could be forced to do that. Now, forcing practically how you break the guy's arm is a different story. But if you ask what the psak would be. Again, there's going to be some individuals who are going to pass them out like this, and that's the question. I just want to tell you the following in regards to the first question. Frustrating as it is, one of the advantages I had, I spent 23 years in Tel Yeshiva, and I spent 20 years in Tel Aviv in close proximity, very close to two tremendous Gedolim, Reb Gifter and Reb Feinstein. And I want to say this right. They weren't perfect. And part of the advantage of being very close to such a person is to see that even though they're not perfect, they're still Gedolim. Our society basically has very black and white. Either you're perfect and then you're a Gedolim, or you're not and then you're nobody. Like, we can't deal with this idea of people being gray. That's part of our problem, the challenge of our society. So, I once heard from Rabbi Zev Leff, he pointed out, the more it discusses about a situation where there emerges something inappropriate, etc. In our society, he'd be no longer be an Amor. He'd be thrown out of the Gemara. Mm-hmm. It's an all, you get one chance, and you're done. Right? Now, so are we condoning doing something wrong? No, we're not condoning something. We're putting it in perspective. Nobody's supposed to be perfect. We don't believe in the infallibility of our Gedolim. There is a religion which believes in the infallibility of their leader, and we don't believe in it. The Gemara simply gives examples. The Torah gives examples of the failings of our Gedolim. Of Rav Avinu, because I'll go in and point out what he did wrong, and Moshe Rabbeinu what he did wrong, and he's still Moshe Rabbeinu, and he's still Rav Avinu. Right? So the fact that we feel that somebody who's a Talmud Chacham of stature is getting something wrong and he's doing something wrong doesn't make him he's not Talmud Chacham of stature anymore. And that's a difficult thing, because especially it's something which we feel very passionate about. Besides this issue, I've dealt with other issues along the way. I happen to be in the know about too many things in my life sometimes, and it leaves me with tremendous frustration. But I remind myself of the lesson that I learned. And usually, many times, I found... I'll just give you a very refreshing story. My wife told me years and years ago that Rebbe Einemer's a Torah. Einemer was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. Rebbe Einemer one day comes into class. He tells the girls, he says, "Yeah, I want you to know that I have an anger problem. I have an issue with anger." Why did he share that with them? Because he wanted them to know that it's okay not to be perfect. The Bar Yochai is perfect. Human beings are not perfect. And you don't have to be perfect to be, the goal is to be as best as you can. So I work on it. And sometimes I overcome it, sometimes I don't overcome it. Right? But she's imagine that you're a 16-year-old girl and you're hearing this from the person you look up tremendously. It was a tremendous lesson of putting things in perspective. That's why I imagine why he did it. I wasn't there, I didn't ask him, but I imagine that's why he did it. That it should be clear to us. And in our society, I find that this is a challenge which we have. We're very quick to judge. We're very quick to assume. And we complain when other people do it about us, but we do it on other people. And we don't know all the details. We don't know many times the situation. So-and-so gave such a thing. I can't imagine he did such a thing. I can't believe he did such a thing. And you look into more about the reason why he did it, because there was X, Y, and Z that you didn't know about beforehand. Right? Oh, now I understand. So now it's okay. So that's the general approach. Now, what do you do when you have a situation where the vast majority of persons are going one way, and this person, is as it were, because of his stature, allowing a whole other... If he wouldn't be there, the problem would fall apart. Because he's sort of like this big shield which everybody can hide behind. You take him away, and there's no, and then the whole thing falls apart, and you solve the problem. Yeah, it's frustrating. It is very frustrating. But that's part of the society that we live in. The Russian has this kashmirna. That's why that's the situation that we're living with. And I just got a phone call today from a doctor. He says, he read the New York Times article. He sent me a text of it. It's a Chil Hashem. Can you do something about it? They said, what do you want me to do exactly? I said, get up on a soapbox and say something. I'll get you a very big soapbox. I said, thank you very much.
We're publishing a vaccine information handbook. And there's a fundraiser on GoFundMe right now to help us publish it.
Okay. Yes. Well,
so you can tell them about it. Yes, that's really what you can do.
There's your answer.
We've done a lot of research.
Excellent.
Okay. And we have Eskimos from Big Rabbi Zalman.
Excellent. Okay.
Do we? Yes, we do.
Yeah, they do.
But still,
sometimes, today they were just passing around a video of some Hasidic woman who is saying, I asked my spiritual advisor and I'm doing this because I'm a religious Jew and I'm asking, right. And we're all like,
like, cringing.
Cringing, yeah.
Like, cringing because of the chil Hashem.
Yeah.
Right. Right? But, you know, but...
Yeah. They all want to know, is that really something that, you know, halacha doesn't allow you to do? And I was like, no.
No, the opposite.
Right.
You know, it's a very good question. And listen, I think that's part of the darkness that we live in. Goalless is this confusion which people have, mm-hmm. which the society, and we live in a world where misinformation. Who was it who said that, you know, a lie travels halfway across around the world before the truth gets its pants on? Who said that? I forgot who said that. One of the famous secular politicians. Yeah, it was a good line. right? That's the reality. You know, right. Nowadays you put, you know, some person puts this on, you know, some social media, and the whole world sees it. Well, you can't respond. How do you respond to that? It's ready. It's a problem. Yeah, it is. That's part of the reality of our society, and we're learning to deal with it, that type of reality in many different ways. Yes.
The view that the vaccine is avera, is the chil Hashem maybe a bigger avera, or the vaccine?
Let me explain something.
What? I don't understand.
Let me explain something.
You're trying to find some way to argue with them.
No, I'm just curious.
No.
Like, from their perspective, you're saying?
Yeah, from their perspective.
Their perspective.
What's your comfortable perspective as an Avera?
They don't believe it's a
Chil Hashem. They're defending Judaism. They're defending their beliefs.
They're doing, in their mind, they're doing all right.
So they're not. They don't believe in an Avera. They don't believe in a Chil Hashem. You know, in other words, arguing Chil Hashem is a very, very difficult argument. A person that's caught up in seeing the world a certain way, they don't see the reaction. If anything, they say, oh yeah, you know. I mean, the Medrash says, I gotta run. The Medrash says a story about the fellow who was had a drinking problem. And the family said, you know, we have to cure him with this. They finally found that this drunk was really, you know, wallowing in this whatever, vomit, you know, the whole thing. They brought the father to look to see what he looked like. Right, you know, the idea of being, he should be so repulsed, he'll stop drinking, and the guy looks over and says, where'd you get the good stuff? You know, you see what you want to see. Come on, tell me. I'm like, okay, ladies.